And if we're comparing the situation between the Raiders and Niners, I think you really, you have to understand how different the situations are. Even though they're similarly bad this year, the Raiders are the kind of bad that the Niners were a couple years ago. In terms of building this roster out from the ground up, they're behind the Niners. And many of the guys playing week to week for the Raiders are mediocre veterans on short-term contracts. So a lot of those guys are going to be gone. 925 Texter, with salary cap increases, 25 will be mid-range price in a year or two. Carr has almost the same stash this year. Oh, stats, I assume is what that person meant. This year as he did in 16. I don't think that's true. You really think there's no trade value? You're crazy. Okay. Maybe saying there's no trade value is going too far. I don't think there'd be a lot of trade value because I don't think a lot of people want to pay Derek Carr the amount of money he's making. And I'm not sure that $25 million will be middle of the road for a quarterback. It's not. It's already not as big a deal as it was when he signed it. So I realize that. It's still a lot of money. And by the way, I'm pretty sure a lot of you are the same folks who told me, well, they had to pay Derek Carr. That's why they couldn't pay Khalil Mack. So it is keeping you from doing things. If you cut Carr, how do you become competitive in the next 3 years, says a 510 texter. Well, I think you have a couple of things you do. One thing is you try to sign a quarterback in the Case Keenum range. Somebody who can competently run your offense and is going to have, you know, is limited in some ways, but is going to have the ability to lead you to a win any given Sunday. Right? Someone who's not as good as Derek Carr, not as talented as Derek Carr, but can run an offense competently. And you're going to pay that person probably less than half of what you're paying Derek Carr. You also spend a draft pick on a quarterback this year. Find the best quarterback in the draft. Find a way to get him. You have enough draft capital, you should be able to do that. If there's nobody this year, look for that guy the year after. But becoming competitive in the next few years, whether you keep Derek Carr or not, is going to have everything to do with how well the Raiders draft under John Gruden. Because you signed John Gruden for 10 years and $100 million, and the first thing he did was gather a bunch of draft picks. 510 says, you're full of it. Carr is definitely worth the money. It's just one spot that the Raiders do not have to worry about. You're just looking for clickbait. We're on the radio, so, you know, clickbait, not a thing.
Thank you for addressing that salient point. I was also wondering how that got applied in this situation. We're looking for audio clicks. I don't know. What is that?
We're not publicizing that I'm giving this take at all. So I promise you, not looking for anything. I'm giving you my opinion.
I don't know. I could drop a quick Twitter poll and see and you, if I can, you, if I can not pop to mention, it up a little bit.
You just heard a national NFL expert say absolutely cut him yesterday. So whatever. This is an interesting text. It doesn't matter what happens with Carr as long as Gruden's the coach. And unfortunately, that might be true. If you want to apply the coaching conversation I had with Robert Mays to the Raiders, it's a bad look, man. It is a bad, bad look. I'm not sure what. Here's the thing about John Gruden is I literally don't know why he got the job. I mean, I don't know what, as a football coach, what about Gruden was attractive to Mark Davis, other than the fact that he knew him from before. You know, you would want your ownership or general management, anytime they're interviewing coaches, to be looking for something in particular. Looking for something to be done at a high level. And when you went and paid $100 million to John Gruden, he hadn't coached in 10 years. And I'm not sure what it is about his coaching acumen that made him the guy.
Commitment to excellence.
Thank you.
The finest organization in professional sports.
I don't know.
I think that's your answer. Just the invocation of Mark, or sorry, of Al. Everything that Mark does and is going to do, if you look down the list, is to prove that he is either different or a better version of Al. What was one of the biggest stains on the back end of Al's tenure is that he let Gruden go and then got pantsed in the Super Bowl because of it. And I think that Mark is convinced that there's this big karmic justice wheel that is spinning and spinning, and he's going to be the one who gets in there and stops it and rewrites his legacy as the one who set everything right with Gruden at the helm.
It's a real rewriting.
Just win, baby.
It's an extensive rewriting, and I don't know that it's going to happen.
No, I don't know that it's going to happen, but I think that's the plan.
808 Texter says, I never seem to hear or read any actual numerical arguments for why Derek Carr is bad. First of all, you're not looking very carefully. They're all over the place. I bet if you Googled Derek Carr yards per attempt, you'd find four different articles numerically breaking down why he's not great. And again, not saying he's not good. He is good. I'm saying he's not great. But continuing with that text, they stumbled on DC in the second round. He clearly can win if you put good weapons around him, and I have zero confidence in Gruden finding another good QB. Now, that is a problem. Please provide some actual evidence. Okay, will do. Derek Carr, last season, had a 6.8 yards per attempt average. One of the worst in the NFL. Year before that, 7.0. Year before that, 7.0. Those are not good numbers. Really good quarterbacks have bigger average yards per attempt than that consistently. It means he's throwing short a lot, which also suggests that his completion percentage, which is very high this year, and decent the previous few, is overinflated by the fact that he mostly throws short passes. Here's another thing. While admittedly he has gone 10 weeks without throwing an interception, that 10 weeks included a 27-3 loss at Seattle, which I understand that it's a loss that's not totally on Derek Carr, but 142 passing yards is probably part of why you only scored 3 points. It includes a 34-3 loss to San Francisco, where he went 16-21 for 171 yards. Efficient, sure. Sacked a lot, yes, but didn't score points. They lost 20-6 to the LA Chargers. Didn't throw a touchdown against the Niners or the Chargers. So, I'm just saying, Derek Carr is good. Is he great? No. And the numbers support that. And I'm not sure you want to pay a good quarterback $25 million when the rest of your team isn't good enough to win games. That's my position. And we now move back to the San Francisco 49ers because I will be joined next by Kyle Madsen, not only a co-host for The Drive, AMs on 1140 KHTK, but also the managing editor for Niners Wire. We will go deep on tomorrow's Niner-Ram matchup. Can the Niners play spoiler? Rams are benching some guys. Could be interesting. Niners-Rams with Kyle Madsen next on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
We are back. Matt Kolsky with you on 95.7 The Game, guiding you through a Saturday afternoon. Producer Gabe is back locked in because of what's transpiring in the Notre Dame game. He's no longer interested in that particular television experiment. So
I'm sorry. Is there a football game being played right now?
See?
The San Jose Sharks. Let's talk about them.
Let's not. Let's talk about the San Francisco 49ers. Congratulations to the Sharks for taking a 6-2 lead over Edmonton. Let's hope they hold on to it based on how this season has gone. Yeah? All right? Cool. Good. We're going to talk Niners with Kyle Madsen, co-host of The Drive mornings on 1140 KHTK out of Sacramento, managing editor for Niners Wire on the internets. Lots of good content there if you're a Niners fan. And let's just start, Kyle, with tomorrow. What's a reasonable goal for tomorrow's game against the Rams?
Don't lose by 30, I think, is a good start.
Yeah, that's good.
I think if they can come out and at least put together a performance kind of like we saw against the Bears, where you walk away going, hey, that wasn't awesome, but there were some good things you can take away from it. I think that's really the goal. The score is secondary. If they happen to win, then we can cross that bridge when we get to it. But I think just getting more good performances individually from some of their young players is what I'm really looking for tomorrow.
Man, winning would really just be looking a gift horse right in the mouth for that Raiders win last week. The Raiders do something nice for you, and you just throw it right back at them. It seems, I don't know, it seems, what's the word, ingrateful. I wouldn't do that if I was them.
Yeah, rude, honestly.
It would be rude.
Christmas present for them, and it's just, yeah, unbelievable.
In any event, let's put the game itself aside, because as you said, I think tomorrow's game is not unlike what this year has become. We'd like to see some nice things that help us decide what to do for the future, but results are secondary at this point, certainly. So let's go to some of those young players you're talking about. Now, Dante Pettis, one of the most exciting young guys, is not going to play, but that does kind of mean everyone playing wide receiver tomorrow is going to be auditioning for the 2019 Niners, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I wrote a little bit about that yesterday, and it's going to be Kendrick Bourne. It's going to be the Richie Jameses and Trent Taylor. Those guys have got to step up in some form or fashion. Taylor's been hurt this year. He had a back injury that he's kind of been working through. And then James, for me, has just been really disappointing. I was really excited about him coming out of Middle Tennessee, and he just hasn't really produced at the rate that I thought he would, but he should get some opportunities on Sunday. And I think if you're looking at Kendrick Bourne or Taylor or James, if they can't earn targets in this scenario, when they're this shorthanded at receiver, you've got to really question their viability as holding roster spots going forward.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you're going to need someone at the top of that depth chart for wide receiver in all likelihood. But you'd like to think that some of the guys who will fill out the depth chart are already on the roster. On the offensive line, now I know this is actually a thing that has not been an issue over the course of the season for the Niners, relative to the many other issues they've had, at least. But do you see this group staying intact? Mike Person's going to be a free agent. You'd assume they could just bring him back, but they also have Josh Garnett there. I think we're pretty convinced the two tackles are the guys who are on the team, but could they potentially switch sides? How do you see this line moving forward?
I don't think the tackles will switch sides. I think they'll keep McGlinchey at the right tackle spot and keep Staley at the left tackle, because my guess is Staley's done after next year, but okay. We'll obviously see. He hasn't really indicated that, but I think they stay there for now. I think Weston Richburg will get better. Kyle Shanahan actually addressed that this week, that Richburg's been dealing with an injury and he's kind of still learning the offense, but for the most part, he's done a good job of getting guys in the right spot. He just hasn't really performed very well. One glaring example of that was the last time Aaron Donald played the 49ers. He had 4 sacks and I think 6 tackles for loss. The interior of the offensive line just did not play well. It'll be interesting to see with Mike Person. There might be a team that's going to overpay him. I don't know if that'll be the 49ers, because like you said, they do have Josh Garnett that they can plug in there. But Garnett, outside of some injuries, was battling for a roster spot all the way throughout training camp. So, yeah, I think if a team is going to overpay Mike Person, the 49ers will have no trouble replacing him with Garnett.
So you mentioned it there, and it's part of the reason I brought up the offensive line, is they are going to, particularly on the interior, which is not the strength, they're going to be tested tomorrow. Now, let me just make sure I've got this right. The last time these two teams played, Aaron Donald had 4 sacks. Four sacks tomorrow would give him the single season sack record.
Yeah.
So can the 49ers keep Aaron Donald from getting the single season sack record tomorrow?
You know, it's going to be tough because they're going to have to throw a lot. And you know that Aaron Donald is going to pin his ears back. I don't think he cares if they run right at him and he runs past Jeff Wilson a couple times and gives up a big play in the running game. I think he wants those four sacks. And a player as dominant as he is, deciding that he's going to pin his ears back and go for 60 or 70 snaps, that's scary. And that's going to be a load for that offensive line. So if I'm putting money on it, I'd probably say no, just because it's so tough to get four sacks. But if he does it, it certainly would not surprise me, because I think that's what he's going to be gunning for tomorrow.
Kyle Madsen is my guest, a co-host for The Drive on 1140 KHTK out of Sacramento, also the managing editor of Niners Wire. And you guys reported Jimmy G doing rehab workouts on a side field during 49er practice. So can you give us anything on that? Did you actually witness that? How far away is Jimmy G? And are we pretty confident at this point that he'll participate in the offseason program and be ready for the start of next year?
Yeah, so I didn't see that personally, but everybody who was there, all the reporters on site, saw Jimmy G doing workouts on the side. He had bands on his legs, and he was doing some jumping and moving exercises, which is certainly good news. Kyle Shanahan said after practice that Garoppolo hasn't had any setbacks, and he's improving with his rehab. And the reason he's not just standing on the field watching practice is because he doesn't necessarily gain anything from that. But he talked about all the things that Garoppolo is learning in meetings and what value he gets from standing on the sideline and listening to calls during games. So it looks like he'll be back. They're optimistic that he'll be back for some of the offseason work. I wouldn't be surprised if he's very limited and kind of OTAs and all that jazz. But I think come training camp, if he's not fully ready, he'll be pretty darn close to it and should be back for week one, which is certainly, I think the goal is to be back to one games count.
So speaking of the quarterback position, do you view this Nick Mullins ascendance as great, now you got a backup quarterback? Or is it, hey man, if Jimmy looks rough the first couple weeks, maybe we take a look at Nick Mullins? Or is it just, let's get whatever you can for him in the offseason because he'll never be this good again?
No, I think they see a backup quarterback because this team, they've dealt with so many injuries this year that depth is so vital. And they're not good enough, frankly, to just let players who can operate in their offense go. So they have Mullins under contract for next season, and I think they'll want to extend him unless T.J. Beathard really comes out and shines next year in camp. But I think Mullins is probably at this point beat out Beathard for the number two spot on the roster. I don't think they'll look at him as a starter at all, just because he is so physically limited.
Yeah,
there's portions of their playbook they just can't use, and we've seen him miss some deep throws to George Kittle this year. That's kind of a bummer. So Garoppolo is going to be the starter, and even if he gets out to a rocky start for the first couple of weeks next year, he'll continue to be the starter. But having a backup who can come in where I used to cover the Titans, okay? Mm-hmm. Marcus Mariota's hurt all the time, and yep, they have never had a backup who can go in and win them a game.
Blaine Gabbert life is plenty familiar to Niner fans, so there's no need to revisit that.
Right. It was Matt Castle first, though, which is even worse if you can imagine. So... So if they have a quarterback who, if Garoppolo has to miss a game or two, they have a guy in Mullins that they can plug in and know that, hey, we have a chance to go win this game. That's huge. So, yeah, I think he's absolutely going to have a roster spot next year. And if they can work out some kind of extension, he'll be on the roster moving forward. However, one caveat, if a team is going to throw a third or fourth round pick at the Niners for Nick Mullins, they're pulling the trigger on that immediately. Like, let's not get it twisted.
As an undrafted player, if you can get that kind of asset for him, you got to do it. No question about it.
Yeah.
You listed coming into this game five Niners with a lot at stake. Now, we talked about wide receiver, and Kendrick Bourne and Richie James are on that list. I think the running back situation actually seems to me like Jeff Wilson Jr., while he can certainly prove some things, is in a really good spot. Because if you got him, why not let him have a roster spot behind Breida and McKinnon? You're going to need a third guy, and he's a little bigger than they are, I believe. But the two guys who interest me the most are the defensive players you mentioned, Marcel Harris and Tavarius Moore. Mm-hmm. And Moore has had less opportunity, but both of them have seemed to improve with every minute they've played. Both of them have flashed at times over the last couple games. I guess my question is, when you say they have a lot at stake coming into this game, do you think they're making cases for starting spots next year, or are you just saying in terms of being on the roster?
I think that they can both make cases for starting spots next year. Chris Biederman at the Sacramento Bee wrote a really good piece about competition on the Niners roster and how there wasn't that this year. You looked at Adrian Colbert and Jaquaski Tart at the end of last year and said, hey, they're going to be the starters. And you looked at Akello Witherspoon and said, hey, he's going to be a starter. There was really no incentive for those guys to get better over the offseason, and I think that's part of the reason we saw them regress this year. And so going into next year, every spot save for DeForest Buckner, Fred Warner, and Richard Sherman, I think every spot on that roster is up for grabs. And so Marcel Harris, who, as you mentioned, has been really good the last few weeks, if he comes out and has a really great game against this really good offense, I think all of a sudden you're looking and going, wow, he has the inside track to start at strong safety next year. Tavarius Moore comes in and has his best game as a pro. Granted, he's questionable, so he may not even play.
Right.
But if he does play and he has his best game as a pro, that's a nice little way to end the year and going, hey, I'm going to make a case for a starting job next year. And maybe he doesn't get it. You know, maybe Witherspoon comes back and dominates in camp, and he and Sherman are the starters again going into next year. But Moore can state his case as a contender for a starting role, I think, with a really good game on Sunday.
Speaking of potential starting safeties for next year, I saw you wrote the piece, I believe it was this week, yeah, the Earl Thomas free agency pursuit piece, which this has been since about week five when it became clear the 49ers desperately need help in their secondary. This is a train I have been riding and yanking on the horn. I just think it's such a natural fit. A team that is desperate for safety help, a player who's angry at the Seahawks. Come on. How could this not work?
And he turns 30 in May, which is not super ideal, but if you can get a couple of good years of Earl Thomas, you're getting a couple of years of a top two or three safety in the league, and maybe the best player at this single high safety position that the Niners use in the league.
Yeah, just another guy with great experience on the defensive scheme who can help, yeah.
Yeah, and if you can, we saw, how many times have we seen them this year get beat deep because the safety was in the wrong spot, or free safety was in the wrong spot.
Because Jimmy Ward's at the line of scrimmage for some reason, yeah.
Right, Jimmy Ward had issues with that. We saw Adrian Colbert bite on some fakes that he probably shouldn't have bitten on. So, yeah, if you can get a guy in Earl Thomas who has experience back there, who can play kind of a Richard Sherman role in terms of guiding the younger players, but also coming in and being a productive player, that's enormous for this defense. And it just makes way too much sense. The Niners have the cap space. They can afford to overpay him a little bit, which is what he's going to want, because Richard Sherman even said, you know, I'll do my best to recruit, but money talks, kind of thing, you know?
Yep.
So if the Niners can overpay him a little bit, I absolutely think that he's a perfect fit. And there's people out there that are going to go, but Jaquaski Tart and Adrian Colbert and Marcel Harris and all these guys, but Earl Thomas is a proven starting safety in the NFL, and the Niners need that. They need players that they can plug in and be productive right away, and Thomas can certainly do that.
I mean, I love the look of Marcel Harris, and I still think Jaquaski Tart can play, but Earl Thomas is literally one of the five greatest safeties of all time. Let's not be ridiculous here.
Yeah.
quickly, looking at tomorrow specifically, other than the wide receiver position and the cornerback position, the defensive line obviously is a huge problem over the course of the year. We know DeForest Buckner can do some things. Is there anybody else in that group that to you looks like a definitive keeper? And are there guys along the line you're looking for tomorrow to make plays in order to keep themselves on this roster moving forward?
Well, I think Solomon Thomas has had a really good last couple of games. It hasn't shown on the stat sheet, but I think he's been much better the last couple of games. So if he can continue that, I like him to be more of a contributor next year. Eric Armstead has quietly had a really nice year.
But for $9 million, nice?
Right. And that's where the question comes in. they do have some cap space to work with, where if he's not, you know, long term at $9 million a year, you pay him for 1 year and see what he's got.
That's not bad.
But I think he can absolutely be a rotational type of player who goes in and stops the run. And the Eagles showed us last year how important it is to have a deep defensive line where you can rotate three, four, five different guys in at different spots. And I think Armstead can do that. I don't think he's ever going to be a dominant pass rusher, but he's been so good against the run this year that I think you have to give him another look going forward and see what kind of role you can carve out for him long term, because he is a quality player. I just don't think he's been the type of player they expected when they drafted him.
Yeah,
both those guys.
That's been a huge problem for the Niners over the last few years, is getting good players when people are expecting great. And I think that it's the same sort of criticism the Warriors get, frankly, is like, yeah, you're playing well, but you're supposed to be way better than everybody else. So what the heck's going on here? Kyle, thank you so much for joining us. And thanks for your service, taking the, what's the right word for it? Years off your life by covering this team week in, week out over the entire season. Very much appreciate it.
Hey, someone pays me to do it, so you know what? I'm blessed as far as I'm concerned. So I appreciate it, though, man.
You and me both. That is Kyle Madsen. Find him on the internet at Kyle A. Madsen on Twitter. He is the managing editor and a frequent writer for Niners Wire, and he co-hosts The Drive mornings, weekdays, 11:40 KHTK out of Sacramento. And yet tomorrow, not unlike virtually every game since week three, is about evaluating the guys you have going into next year. And Matt Breida and Dante Pettis being out, it hurts the offense's ability to succeed, but it also throws young guys into big situations and you get a chance to see what they do. And even if they don't put big numbers on tape, which I highly doubt they will put play on tape. And that's what the 49ers need from them. I'm not necessarily saying you and I will be able to evaluate everything Kendrick Bourne does tomorrow if he gets three targets, but the Niners will. The Niners will know what that means. And really, there's nothing to be gained from this game tomorrow other than finding out what you've got heading forward. I think the five players Kyle listed in his article are great names for this. Marcel Harris and Tavarius Moore, obviously. Now, for me, I would want to hire players to start ahead of them. Like, I think that's what the offseason is for. If you go into next year saying Marcel Harris and Tavarius Moore are starting next to Jaquaski Tart and Richard Sherman, you failed. The offseason's been a failure. That can't be the plan. But if Marcel Harris and Tavarius Moore keep looking as good as they have, that does affect where you commit the most of your offseason resources. Because they don't, I mean, I'll tell you one thing. Cassius Marsh can't look good enough tomorrow to convince me that they don't need a pass rusher really, really badly. I am positive the 49ers are in desperate need of outside pass rush. I'm also positive that they need a safety. How badly they need a safety and how good that safety has to be, it depends. Whether they need two safeties, I'm not sure. Same thing for corners. I'm pretty sure Richard Sherman is a starting corner on this team next year, which means I'm pretty sure they better sign somebody to at least compete with Tavarius Moore for that other spot. And Akello Witherspoon, for that matter. So, yeah, they need another corner. But does that need for corner drop down the list a little bit if Tavarius Moore looks awesome tomorrow? Maybe. Doesn't mean you don't sign one. Like Kyle said, at the very least, you're creating competition for next year's camp. You need more competition. But Harrison Moore in particular can show me something today. Or continue to show me something, maybe, is more of the point. As far as Jeff Wilson Jr., I'm penciling him in. That guy's looked pretty good. Don't fumble the ball. But otherwise, that guy's looked pretty good. And I actually have to double check this because I haven't checked it. But unless my eyes are playing tricks on me, he's significantly bigger than the other two running backs the Niners have under contract for next year. They got him at 6'1", 194, which is not huge, but it is bigger than Jerick McKinnon and Matt Breida. And I think if you need a compliment to McKinnon and Breida, who are got to both be locked in at this point, I would like a compliment that's a slightly bigger guy and that runs with a little more power. And Kyle Juszczyk isn't quite getting it done for me in that respect. So I would pencil Jeff Wilson Jr. in, but then on the wide receiver front, Kendrick Bourne and Richie James are your starting receivers tomorrow. And it's a tough situation because they're going against Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters, pretty good corners. Although, granted, Peters hasn't had a great year and Talib's been hurt. They're pretty darn good corners. Talib in particular is a big corner and can probably push around Richie James and Kendrick Bourne at the same time if he wants to. But what Bourne and James can do as starting receivers, like if we watch tomorrow's game and Kendrick Bourne ends up with 2 targets and Richie James ends up with 3 and Kittle has 18, I don't know if Kendrick Bourne and Richie James are on this team next year. If those guys can't get open enough to at least draw the ball, that might be it for them. And like Kyle, I was very excited about Richie James after what I saw in the preseason, much of which was with Nick Mullins, by the way, was it not? I would like to see Richie James get some real looks tomorrow. Because I do think he's been way at the bottom of the depth chart all year. And I do think you get out of rhythm. I'd like to see him get a chance to develop a bit of a rhythm tomorrow. And look, results don't matter. So I want to see as much of these guys as I can. I mean, if you bounce the ball off of Kendrick Bourne's hands for a pick six, throw it to him again next time. I want to see how he responds. Now's a unique opportunity where a win means nothing that gives you a chance to see guys in legitimate game situations and judge how they respond. You don't often have that in the NFL. The sample size of games is small enough, and the ability to be competitive is within reach enough that it's very rare you're going to have the opportunity to play actual regular season NFL football that the results don't mean anything. I think that's an opportunity you should seize. That's what I think. They'll have a chance to seize it tomorrow. Warriors with a chance to seize an opportunity tonight. A little chance for revenge against the Blazers team that didn't even play well on Thursday. Again, that's the thing I want to keep coming back to. A Blazers team playing great could beat a Warriors team playing not great a lot of nights. But the Warriors really have to mess up to lose to a Blazers team that isn't playing well. To lose to a Blazers team that, despite Yusuf Nurkic's dominance, shot the ball under 40% on the night. A Blazers team that had McCollum and Lillard go 14 for 42. If they shoot it 42 times tonight, there's a good chance they make twice as many shots. 28 for 42 sounds more realistic for Lillard and McCollum than 14 of 42 does to me. So, look, you play bad, you can lose to anyone. You play okay, you can lose to good teams. But when a team like Portland plays like poop and still beats you, I think that's something we got to talk about. And it's a good opportunity to get them back tonight. Warrior Talk is next. Logan Murdoch joins me in about 30 minutes. Until then, you and me. Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795. Phone number, 888-957-9570. What do you want to see from the Warriors after back-to-back losses when they head up to Portland tonight? I'm Matt Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
We are back. Matt Kolsky with you on 95.7 The Game. A little over an hour remaining in the showgram before we take you to Warrior pregame with Daryl, the California Casanova Johnson, and Matt Steinmetz.
Are you going to single-handedly legitimize that nickname? Is that going
to
be you?
I hope to. What if, frankly, if I have an opportunity to call anyone the California Casanova, I will do exactly that. I think there are better... Look, if we were going to have a Twitter poll...
We can always have a Twitter poll.
If we were going to come up with people who might conceivably be called the California Casanova, I'm not sure Guru would be first on the list. But given the opportunity, of course I will take it to call him the California Casanova.
You know, we could throw that at, obviously me, but I'm not here to talk about me. We could
Are
throw
sure?
that at Jimmy G. I think that's a fair
Jimmy
one.
Jimmy G. I think Clay.
Clay also.
I think Clay could conceivably
Definitely.
Be the California Casanova.
Claytheism, the movement that has taken the NBA by storm.
Jimmy G's a good vote. If anyway, if people want to suggest other options for the California Casanova, my vote's for Guru.
That's definitely something that the text line should get in on. I'm going to be keeping my eye out from here
Who's
on
a better
out.
California Casanova
anybody.
Than Daryl Johnson? You stop that.
No. I'm not saying that anybody's better than Guru.
Okay.
I'm saying anybody you want to name, not limited to the people that we've already said. I don't know if you can attach images to
in this
to
house.
The
we don't.
Stream, but
in this house, we do not slander Daryl the Guru Johnson.
I never do.
Okay, just but, making sure.
But yeah, no Facebook links to your friends. Anything that you want to pass
Gabe
along.
Gabe wants to see your friends.
I'm going
to
do the deep dive.
Show me
back
your
here.
Friends, says Gabe.
Show. I'm
the Chilton Autobody text line is 95795. I will take your suggestions for other California Casanovas, but I'm still leaning towards Guru right now. He announced it himself in the commercial. Who am I to disagree? Also, feel free to weigh in on the sports issue we're discussing, which is, what's... 510 text. I got to look that up. That's got to be somebody I know personally.
It has to be you that you know personally?
Yeah. Look up that 510 texter we just heard from. I'm not saying that name until I know who sent it in. Let's go to Dell and Hayward, because what we're really talking about, besides the California Casanova, is what's wrong with the Warriors, if anything? A very interesting text answer to this that I'll get to in a second, but let's hear from Dell and Hayward. You want to weigh in? 888-957-9570 is the phone number. Got about 20 minutes before we get to Logan Murdoch early next hour. What's up, Dell?
Okay, I love him, but I'm seeing no fire. I'm seeing no kill mentality. I'm seeing intimidation from the other teams. I know there's no president in the paint right now. I get it. But they're playing, to me, and I've been a Warrior fan since they were in the city back in the 60s. To me, they're playing like they're just going through the motions. And what's this business? I love Curry. I got three different Curry jerseys. But what's this business with him passing the ball with one hand? That's laziness. If you pass the ball with two hands, or if you got it with two hands, the defender don't know if you're going to shoot it, you're going to bounce past it, if you're going to, what you're going to do with it. But these one-handed, lazy passes, that's what happened the other night. He turned it over because it's laziness. Now, like I told the guy that I called, I'm just a regular Joe. But in watching them, it looks to me like all they're doing is going through the motions. And don't get me wrong, I love them. But damn, you know, they just look like they're, I don't know, lazy. That's all. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be picking on them. But
I hear you, yeah. Dell. Yeah. I think it's worth noting that a lot of what Dell just said is the stuff we said last year. And that doesn't mean it's not true. Sometimes the Warriors seem unmotivated. And if they are, I'm not sure we can blame them. I don't want to say they've earned the right to be unmotivated, because that I don't think that's true, and that sounds weird. But that it's a criticism that has been levied a lot, and I think it's a criticism that would be understandable if it was true. Here's a text from a 510. Complacency would be the word I would use to describe the way the Warriors are playing right now on both sides of the ball. And while I don't think that is true for 48 minutes a game every game, I do think it's been true too often. I do. I think maybe too often is the wrong way to put it, because what's the cost? if they are complacent, if they are complacent, what's the cost of that? Maybe more to the point, if complacency is the issue now, do we expect it to be an issue in April, May, and June? Because that's the question I asked last year all the time. Yes, fine. Complacency is a problem today. But does anyone believe it'll be a problem in April, May, or June? I never did last year, and it wasn't. I don't this year. I'm not... If motivation is the problem, if competitive fire is the problem, then to me, that's just a reflection of the wild success they've had. 510 says, it's not lack of motivation or complacency. These guys aren't hungry anymore. They're well fed. All right. But I don't see that being a problem come playoff time. And equally, let's say they play like they're well fed all year and end up with the second or third seed. I don't see that being a problem. I don't. Wasn't a problem last... Well, didn't turn out to be a problem last year. And if the argument is, well, it could have been, they damn near lost to the Rockets, that, yeah, I guess you're right, and maybe I'm being overconfident. And maybe that's what this is. Maybe this is me being overconfident. But I've seen this team pull it together too often and too many times to think they're not going to be able to do it. We had a texter earlier today say it's not that easy to flip the switch. They did it last year. They really did. And again, I don't know what, look, if you think the Rockets could have beat them with Chris Paul, I suppose you're entitled to that opinion, but the facts are the facts. And they looked not hungry, undermotivated, complacent plenty of times last year during the regular season. And come playoff time, they got it done. So that to me is why it's just hard for me to generate too much concern, especially when the things we're concerned about are, hey man, they don't have a big guy right now, and that looks rough. Yeah, but you know, they got a solution for that on the way. Get your boogie on. If the criticism is, man, Klay Thompson, he's not shooting the ball. Yeah, but I have every faith in Klay.
Claytheism, the movement that has taken the NBA by storm.
If the argument is Draymond's not good anymore, can't hit a shot to save his life, not as effective a defensive player, I say, you know, doubt Draymond at your own risk.
Noted. Great. We'll see y'all soon.
So that's, there's just too much evidence for me of this team being better than everybody to think that any of the problems we're seeing now, and they are problems and they are real, I just don't think any of them are big enough to derail this train from its ultimate destination, which is a third straight championship, fourth in 5 years. And to that same point, although I know we're not talking about this right now, to that same point, if they win a third title, I think when it comes down to it, Kevin Durant's coming back. Because there's only one place he'll have a chance to win a fourth straight title next year. And that's just not an opportunity that people have. 650, somebody should bring a toaster to Klay. Not the first person to suggest that. I, for one, would say you can't go toaster again, right? It would have to be something else. Like, I'm not even sure you go appliance again. I think you got to go totally left field. What was great about the toaster came out of nowhere. Right? I mean, the toaster was a fun story because a toaster? Who signs a toaster? How weird. I think you have to find something equally weird. So there we go. There's another question for you. Children Auto Body text line, 95795. Phone numbers, 888-957-9570. We got about 15 minutes before we get to Logan Murdoch, who covers the Warriors. So you tell me, what should Klay sign? A toaster? Got him super hot last time? And now you need a new streak starter. a new slump buster. 510 says it's the beard. That's not the first time I've heard that either, but Clay wants to try some different facial hair, and as someone who's tried a lot of mediocre facial hair over the years, I want to give him that opportunity. At a certain point, maybe you do cut off the beard, you know, just to change the mojo up a little bit. But I'm not going to blame the beard right now. I'm not going to blame the beard. I did think it was interesting that Rick Barry told us earlier that he would have a shooting coach, essentially, and he suggested Steve Kerr, who seems like a good shooting coach to me. But Rick Barry said if he was Clay, he would have someone study the tape with him. And I think we're probably getting to the point where that's about necessary. 510 texter suggested signing some butt cheeks. There's no way for me to respond to that without getting fired. Sorry. I have lots of good ideas. I'm not comfortable saying any of them on the air. I'll text you some things. I'll text you some good responses to that line in a second. We will take your suggestions of things Clay could sign to get out of this slump. So, you know, 888-957-9570. Actually, we probably should not take those phone calls. Hit the text line if you have a suggestion of what Clay should sign to get out of the slump. Ooh, 650, Sam from Mountain View says, Clay should sign a newborn baby. Bring new life to the Warriors by signing new life. I like that. That's the sort of non-pornographic suggestion I was looking for. 360 texter, can't respond to that on the air either. I realize what I've done. Now I realize the Pandora's box I opened by asking what Clay should sign to get out of his slump. I'm not saying I regret it. I'm just saying I won't be able to read most of your texts on the air. Console yourself by knowing you have entertained me personally and probably the guys in the other studio as well. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM at HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, the radio home of the Golden State Warriors. 650 texter says narrow his base. I assume that means to sort of, I assume that's a criticism of his form. I don't think I'm comfortable criticizing his form. Now that 650 texter rather might be a shooting coach. And I don't have an answer for if there's anything wrong with his form. It looks great to me, just like it always has. Steve Kerr talked about it. It didn't sound like he saw anything wrong with the form.
You have to trust the body of work. And obviously, there's a body of work here. That, I mean, we're talking about a future Hall of Famer, you know, one of the great shooters in the history of the league. I've said publicly, has the best shooting form of anybody I've ever seen. Oh, my gosh. It is just textbook. But this game is funny, you know, that sometimes, you know, things go wrong. You don't quite feel right. You lose your rhythm a little bit. And it happens even to the very best shooters out there. Dry spells, whatever you want to call them, they happen. And the best players, guys like Clay, they keep shooting. And eventually they just get out of it. And then you just move on. And that's what'll happen.
There you go. You just keep shooting. Just keep shooting. It's not hard. Now, it is frustrating and confusing that it hasn't come around yet. Yeah, that 650 texter said his feet are wider than usual on a shot. That could be true. I haven't broken down the tape in enough depth to know for sure if that's factual. But sure, it's possible. I just think the Rick Barry suggestion makes a lot of sense. I don't know if he's got a hitch in his form. I can't see it. Maybe the 650 texter sees something I'm not seeing, maybe not. But either way, there are people who can see that sort of thing. And I don't know if this has happened yet. It might be interesting for someone to ask Clay if he's done this yet. And he, in fact, Clay himself has said, who am I going to ask? I know more than most people do about shooting. I've done it. I know what I'm doing. I don't need help. And frankly, that's how he should feel. 870 says sign a brick because that's what he's been putting up. Perhaps two negatives equal a positive. Maybe that gets him out of the slump. It's an interesting theory. I wouldn't shut the door on it. A brick would not be my first example. I want to keep bricks out of his brain as much as possible. He could sign a bucket. See what I'm getting at here? Positive mojo. Positive mojo. Someone bring a bucket to a quite signing event. 408, what did Rick Barry suggest? Well, that's just what I'm talking about. Rick Barry suggested sitting down with somebody who's an expert in this sort of thing, like Steve Kerr, and studying the tape. And in fact, Rick Barry said, see if we can go cut that. Maybe we'll play it later next hour. But Rick Barry said he went through a brutal slump at one point in his Warriors career. And he couldn't figure out what he was doing wrong, but he knew something was off because he wasn't hitting the shots he normally hit. And he said he went to his teammate, Jeff Mullins, who was a knockdown shooter, a really effective jump shooter. And he asked his friend, Jeff Mullins, hey, could you watch my shot? Just keep an eye on it. Tell me if you see anything different. If you see something in my motion that is leading to my shot not working the way it usually does. And he said within a short amount of time, Jeff Mullins said, yeah, I think you're releasing it a little late. You're releasing on your way down in the air instead of at the peak of your jump. And as Rick pointed out, you're really, if you're going to make that mistake, you're better off shooting earlier than late. The worst thing you can do as a jump shooter is shoot on your way down. And he said it was that simple. He made a small adjustment. And boom, shot back on track. So, again, that may already have happened. I have no idea what's going on behind the scenes, but I do think it's reasonable to say, all right, it's about time Clay took a deep look, studied the tape. I think we hear about that in baseball all the time. When a hitter who's been good for a long time goes through a slump, they go into the batting cages. They watch video of their swing. You know, we hear about starting pitchers. Something's weird. Velocity's down a little. Fastball's not, doesn't have the life it used to, and my slider's not moving the way it used to. Well, you watch some tape of what you've been doing for the last week, and then you watch some tape of what you were doing 2 years ago when your stuff was electric. And I that's how you figure out what went wrong. 510 texter says the Dubs simply don't have anything to play for. The only goal they have this year is to three-peat, and they can't start playing for that until April. Their playoff seeding is all but irrelevant. They could be the fourth seed and still be the favorite to win the West. And I think that's real. But also, another texter made the point that they're not winning games that they allegedly care about. 415 texter. Everything you're saying is true, but they're not winning the games they, quote, want to win, a la Christmas Day. And I think that's a viable response to the who cares until April criticism. It's natural that motivation is down on the average on a night-to-night basis for a team with this level of expectation and this history of success. It's natural. You would expect them to be less motivated than they were 2 or 3 years ago. It makes perfect sense.